You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is my co-host, psychologist, Dr. Melody Fox.
Each week, we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future.
And we will address such issues as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound.
With each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we have both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are following their passion to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we will continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, Melody, in regards to our guest today, have you ever wondered how some people seem to have more influence than others?
Well, I know some people are more persuasive.
Absolutely.
And motivational.
Absolutely. Well, our guest today may just have the answer to that question and help us to get our children to make better choices, to make our employees maybe more productive, and to motivate ourselves sometimes to be the person that we want to be.
Well, our guest today, of course, is Michael V. Padillon, Ph.D., who is a clinical psychologist and award-winning faculty member at Yale University School of Medicine.
And Michael maintains a practice as a motivational coach, consultant, speaker, and therapist, and is the author of a new book on how to motivate anyone, and it's quickly titled Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything Fast.
I love that title. And Dr. Padillon has devoted his whole career almost to researching and teaching his instant influence technique to thousands of people in both a professional arena as well as a personal level. People from all walks of life have been trained, such as business executives, human resource managers, parents, teachers, children, probation officers, psychologists, and other health professionals, as well as individuals struggling with a range of addictive and compulsive behaviors. And he also has consulted with business and organizations such as General Electric, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Hazelden, the National Institutes of Health, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, among many others.
That's right. And he is here with us to share how anyone can use his quick and easy approach to influence the important people in their lives. Michael, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Well, we are very excited to doing that. Now, I was curious, with a successful consulting business, why did you write this book?
Well, I mean, this is the book that I've been dying to write for years because the same simple, scientifically validated approach seems to work from the emergency room all the way to the boardroom. So I really wanted to broadly disseminate this effective method.
Well, and with so many motivational books out there and various methods, tell us a little bit about what makes yours different.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of books out there that can give you a quick recipe for how to manipulate a situation or to trick somebody into doing something for you, but it doesn't last. So I like my approach, the approach that my colleagues and I developed over the last 20 years, that really mobilizes someone's own reasons for doing something. So yes, you may want to have your colleague or your child do something that they need to do, but my approach hinges on getting them to vocalize why they would want to do it. And that really leads to more sustainable and genuine change.
Well, and I got to tell you, I love the book, and I'm about halfway through it right now. And one of the things that I love most is the simplicity and the guiding principles. You know, can you share with our listeners, how do you begin the method?
Sure. Well, thank you for your kind words about the book. But yeah, the method is rather simple. It's not simplistic, but we really hinge this approach on the idea that people only listen to one person. And I'm sorry, it's not their parent, boss, or best friend. It's themselves. And so while many other motivational approaches teach you how to be inspirational and give great speeches, my approach focuses on helping people convince themselves to do what they need to do. So that's the main idea. And every one of us has somebody that we'd like to influence, but very few of us know that there's a scientifically proven way of doing this in 7 minutes or less. So the main initial thing that you do when you try to motivate someone is to first tell them you're not going to do a hard sell. Mm-hmm. Tell them it's up to them whether or not they want to clean their room, stop drinking too much alcohol, or do the project within the time frame. It's their choice, because that's the reality, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I know working with my clients, that's the biggest thing I have for them. It's their choice. They could choose to do it or not do it. You know, they could decide. And I really like that throughout the book, you talk about reinforcing the autonomy of the person.
Right. That's exactly what this is. When you say to your client, this is up to you, it's your choice, you're reinforcing their freedom of choice or their autonomy. And, you know, I find that this is a really important thing, and it's not hard to do, but the thing that happens is that people are so used to their autonomy being taken away, being told that they have to do something, that you may need to say it to your colleague or child or friend a few times so that they can really get it, that you believe that, mm-hmm. right? When you say this to your client, you believe it. You want them to believe it, too, so that they can start thinking about what they want versus what's being imposed upon them.
Right. I know we're going to probably get through this in a little bit, too, but one of the things that you talk about is the cognitive dissonance that, you know, teenagers have automatically, I think. You tell them to do something, automatically they say no.
Right. Right. You know, we all have a little inner teenager, though, I think. So the stronger someone says you have to, the more likely we want to do the opposite, even if we internally think it is a good idea for us. So, yeah, with teenagers especially, since we already know that when we tell them you really have to do that, you have to text me when you get there, you have to, if we already know that that's going to make them want to do it less, mm-hmm. and even perhaps contribute to their quote-unquote forgetting to do it, then we really should apply the opposite, which also holds true. When you say to a teenager, look, it would be helpful to me if you texted me when you got there. It's your choice. I'm not going to be there. I won't be able to twist your arm to do it, but it would be helpful. That message tends to stick better because there's no inner resistance to it. There's no have to. Well, there's an explanation, but there's no have to.
And that's right. And I love the fact that it really does give them a choice, and it allows them to know that it really is their choice. And I want to share with you that I recently did an internal training, and we do them monthly with our staff. And I really used what I was gaining from your book to help with my own employees, because we're going out, we're picking up young people, and we're taking them to, say, a drug rehab program or to some sort of a specialized school or program. And that was one of the main things we talked about, is that, you know, we need to be giving them a choice. And one of the key points that I think our people liked the most was when they gave a level a reason as to why they didn't want to go, and then they added in the 1 to 10, and they said, okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, why is it, you know, where would you put yourself in regards to the fact of you not wanting to go, and whatever number they picking the number lower and asking them why they didn't pick that number, that was the one point that I think some of my people said, you know, I love this. It's so different, and none of the kids are expecting this. They're always expecting somebody to go in the other direction. So I just want to let you know that we've already tried to utilize some of the tools that you're giving us in the book, and it's already working.
Well, that warms my heart. Thank you so much. And you're doing outstanding and very important work, and so to hear that is fantastic.
Well, Alan was,
and Melody, you were going to say something?
I was going to say Alan was talking about step three, but I think it would be helpful if you talked about what the different steps are, because I believe there are six of them, right?
There are six of them. So you start by saying, look, this is up to you, which is very surprising to people, especially teenagers, but that softens them. That lowers the defenses. It tells them, look, we're going to be talking about what you want, not what I want. I'll be clear that I'd like you to do that, but it is up to you. So that's how you start. And then there are six motivational questions that follow. And what Alan was talking about was questions 2 and 3. But let me give you steps 1, 2, and 3 all the way through. As soon as you have somebody thinking, oh, it is up to me, why might I want to do it and why don't I want to do it? You have two different directions to go in. Usually when we're dealing with resistant people, we ask them, why don't you want to lose weight? Why don't you want to go to rehab? Why don't you want to do what the company is asking you to do? And it's a logical, rational question, but what does it get us? What do people tell us when we ask them why don't they want to do something that's good for them?
Because it's focusing on the negative.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even though people who are not used to this approach will say, but we need to know what the obstacles are to remove them, we often can't remove them. We often can't remove the obstacle of, you know, I can't go to rehab because of this, you know, because of my job or because I don't want to go away from my girlfriend or whoever. We can't remove those obstacles. So instead, we start the instant influence process by asking the other question. If you were to go to rehab or if you were to text me when you get there, what would be your reason for doing it? In other words, why might you change? In other words, why might you do what I'm asking you to do? Mm-hmm. And what that does is two things. It surprises the person, and surprises always lower defensiveness and resistance. But then if you can get them to answer that, they will tell you what's on the other side of this scale. They'll give you reasons. Well, you know, if I text you when I get there, you won't bug me for an hour after I get home. If I go to rehab now, then I'll be clean by the time the holidays come around, even if my girlfriend will be upset. We kind of nudge them to the other side of the argument. And since they're vocalizing their own reasons, they're starting to convince themselves.
I like that. And, you know, and you're a psychologist and you're a researcher, and you understand as well as I do, that's kind of the art of therapy sometimes, is to allow the other person to come up for the reasons themselves on why they want to change.
Absolutely, because I mean, we know through our training and experience that no amount of telling and selling, telling them what they should do and our reasons why, will get a resistant person to change. Now, if you have somebody who's very agreeable and says, Doc, tell me what to do, I'm ready to go, and they truly are ready to and motivated to go, then you move on to the action stage of change, to strategies and techniques. But more often than not, people who are dealing with really serious issues need to get their motivation bolstered. Mm-hmm. And there's no better way than...
Right. And what do you do, and this is what we get sometimes, when they look at you like you have two heads or you got to be joking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when I'm training people to do this, I want them to view that as a good thing. That's a signal that they're doing it right. Because a lot of people say, oh, it was uncomfortable, so I stopped. Mm-hmm. No, don't stop. The shock value of it is very important. I mean, try to grab a teenager's attention with logical or rational questions or statements. That's not going to work. You grab the attention of teenagers or other resistant people by giving them off-the-beaten-path questions. So that's a good thing.
And you also give them...
You might even say, look, yeah, I know that's a different question, but try to answer it. Mm-hmm. If you were to go to rehab right now with me, if you were to come home right now, back to your home, what would be your reason for doing it? I'm not saying you have to, and I'm not saying you're going to, but what's on the other side of the equation? You told me why you don't want to, but why might you? And that's how you begin the instant influence process.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Alan mentioned earlier was a scale. Can you explain the scale?
Yeah. So that's the scale, or the readiness ruler question is question number two of the instant influence process. So give me an example of what issue would you like me to target? So I'll talk about one thing. Is it a teenager going to rehab or something different?
How about a teenager who just doesn't want to clean their room? They just sit on the couch all day and just ignore their parents.
Okay.
Perfect.
So we started by telling them they don't have to, and then they look at you like you have two heads, and then you said, but, you know, hear me out. I just have a couple of questions for you. If you were to clean your room, what would make you do that? Why would you decide to ever clean your room? And now they look at you like you have three heads. But it continues. And question number two is, I know this is going to sound silly, but on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 means you're not ready at all and 10 means you're totally ready, how ready are you on that scale to clean your room? And most of the time, even with the most resistant people, you get a number that's higher than a 1. Rarely do people say not at all. I'll talk about what to do if they do say 1. But let's say your teenager says, you know what, Dad, I'm not so into cleaning my room right now. I'll pick a 3. I'll ask you guys, but I'll have your audience think about it too. What do you think your teenager is expecting you to say when he gives you a 3 out of 10 on that scale?
At that point, they're expecting you to say, what do I have to do to get you higher? What do I have to do to
right.
to get you to a point in which you will want to clean your room?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what they're expecting.
Or maybe even, you know, why aren't you at least a 5? I've been, you know, on you about this for the last week. None of those logical, rational questions work because they only have the person rehearse excuses or even legitimate reasons, which doesn't get them motivated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they may even tune you out because it's the same broken record. But instead, question number 3, what Alan was alluding to before, is taking that number and asking a very different question. Here's a question. Why didn't you pick a lower number? And again, the shock value, again, occurs in number 3. And the kid says, you want me to be lower on the scale? I say, no, I don't want you to be lower. But I notice you said a 3. You didn't say a 1. Why didn't you say a 1? In other words, why are you as motivated as you are, even if that's just a tiny bit?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that the teenager says, well, eventually it has to get done, or actually, I got to clean this area because I am looking for that English assignment that I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're back. And so what's happened now? What's different than before when they're saying, I can't, leave me alone, why do you nag me? Now they're starting to give you reasons, their own reasons, mm-hmm. why they might want to do it. A repetition of that is what gets people influenced and motivated.
Right. And I was going to say, and even if it's not something that you might think is important, you know, as the parent in this particular scenario, at least we're finding out what the reason is to them. I mean, it may not make any sense to us. It may be because I haven't found my blue shirt in 3 days, you know, or something
right.
like that. You know, but at least we know where they're thinking, and I think it helps us to continue the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, if we're so worried about our kids being responsible and taking care of their belongings and their future homes, then we need to do something like this rather than to just have them snap to it when we tell them. We're not going to always be there. We want them to think about not only what they need to do, but their own compelling reasons for doing it, because that motivation is sustainable. My motivation, my reason for the teenager to clean the room, that's not sustainable. I won't always be there.
Mm-hmm. And I like that because you're also training them to think on why they should
yes.
do things. You're changing the, I think, their brain and yeah. how they think and how they figure things out in the world as well. So they could start mm-hmm. motivating themselves and figuring out, well, why would I want to do this?
Right. And now parents say to me, my kid would never think, hey, why would I do this? Why would I want to do this? And I say, well, yeah, I based on what you've told me and what I know about teenagers, they wouldn't naturally do that until we said, look, this is your deal. It's your room. It's up to you. I'm not saying there'll never be consequences to this room getting smellier and smellier, but right now I want you to think about what's in it for you, because the people will only think about their own reasons once they feel the autonomy to consider them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and talking about it too, I know moving into the next, I guess number 4, I think it is, but mm-hmm. reminding people not to give up too quickly when you're attempting this process with somebody.
Absolutely. It's not going to take long, but don't give up the moment that somebody looks at you like you have a, you know, 3 heads, because that's intentional. That means it's working. Give yourself a pat on the back when that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody starts to give you reasons that are not yours, don't worry. People only change for their own good reasons. So, you know, look, the room will get clean. It can get clean because he needs to find the green shirt versus that's just the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So stay with it. And even when, or especially when it seems the person continues to be resistant, if they give you answers to these questions, it's going to happen.
Right.
They may not say, oh, I'm now going to do what a responsible teenager should do and clean his room. They don't. They want to save face. They may not say, oh, I'm going to do it. But if they start to build up reasons for doing so, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So basically yeah. watch for those small behavioral changes as well.
Right. Or, I mean, look, if you get discouraged because, you know, you're not getting anything, then maybe you asked for too much. If you ask them to clean up their room and mow the lawn and take down the laundry, then maybe you've asked for too much. Ask the scale or any of these questions on one specific target behavior.
Well, I was curious, too, if you could talk a little bit about your experiment with the students involving psychological reactants.
Right. Okay, so psychological reactants, or as people generally know it as reverse psychology, is a true phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Experiments, you know, for the last 40 years in psychology labs or psychology classrooms on college campuses have shown it time and time again. When you tell someone, look, you should really do this, their rated interest in that activity goes way down. Even if prior to you telling them they should really do this thing, they rated it as a very interesting activity. You know, we joke about it on sitcoms and movies, it's reverse psychology. Yeah, but we joke about it, and it's been around for so long because it works. The moment you do the opposite, when you tell somebody, look, you don't have to do that, they want to do it more. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those basic truths about human behavior.
Well, I had me thinking about one of the techniques in psychology is sometimes you prescribe the symptom or prescribe the behavior for them to do more yelling if that's what they want to stop doing, for example.
Right. Or with the child, you could say to the teenager who's reluctant to talk to you about the room, you can say, look, I want to prove to you that I'm not here to make you do it. I just want to talk about why you might ever do it. But to prove to you that I'm not here to nag you or to force you, I'm going to say, please do not clean the room for the next 2 days. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you my blessing or prescription. Absolutely do not. That's to prove to you I'm not trying to make you do it. And then you ask them the instant influence questions. The questions will work, but what's also operating here is that you've reinforced their autonomy a different way. You've told them, don't do the thing I've been nagging you about it because it is up to you. But then they'll react against that and then want to clean the room more. It's just, But see, this is not a manipulation. No. You are always being above board and you're saying, it's not because of me that I want you to clean the room, even though every parent would take that if they could have that power. I want you to learn how to do things for yourself, and that includes coming up with your own reasons for mm-hmm. cleaning the room.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking, too, that you mentioned in the book there's three guiding principles to instant influence. What are those?
So the first is that people only change when they hear themselves argue in favor of change. And that means that they have to hear their own reasons. Mm-hmm. And we help them with that by asking these questions. And not only that, when they give us the reasons, we have to sort of reflect on those. We have to kind of reiterate or feed them back. So if the teenager says, well, I do need that green shirt, you say, well, that green shirt's important to you. You know, you may have to clean one part of this room to find that. That's important to you. Mm-hmm. So the first principle is that people need to hear them, that will change when they hear themselves argue in favor of it. The second is that when people hear us telling them our reasons, that makes them less motivated. It makes them less likely to come up with their own reasons. So we need to take that out of the picture. And the final one is that people have their own autonomy. Whether we want to reinforce it or not, people do what they want to do, even when it's somebody who's a direct report to you at work or a child or a patient and you're a doctor. They're going to do what they want to do anyway, so why not engage them where they're at and say, what do you think about this? What mm-hmm. might make you ever want to do this?
Absolutely. Oh, Alan's pointing to me going, we're just sitting here talking and listening, but he's pointing to the clock and saying, we need to do a break right now. So if you have mind holding on, our guest today on Answers for the Family is Dr. Michael Padalon, the author of Instant Influence, How to Get Anyone to Do Anything Faster. We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment. Stay with us with Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are talking with Michael V. Pantalon, and we are talking about instant influence. Michael, we also get questions that are sent in from listeners, of which we're very thankful, all of you that send those in. Please know that we really appreciate it. And we have one that has come in, and this is from someone who says, as a mother of five children, three who are teens with the occasional rebellion episodes, I presume your techniques would be helpful to parents who need to improve their communication and influence with their kids. Is this the case? And if so, I'll be buying your book immediately. So it's not even a question. I think they're just really looking for some help.
Absolutely. It absolutely has everything to do with communication and influence. And I like the way the listener put the question, because it is, at its heart, a communication style. There's nothing else to do. There's no reward chart. There's no punishment consequence. It's about how to communicate. And what I love about this is, besides influencing or motivating your child, at the same time, you're building a better relationship. You're modeling good relationship skills that they'll need with spouses and friends and coworkers in the future. You're saying, look, we can both win here. I can get the room clean, and you can assert your autonomy and figure out why it's important to you. That's great stuff, besides getting the room clean.
Right. Yeah.
And thinking about that, since they want to buy your book immediately, where would they find your book?
They can find the book. The book is Instant Influence by Michael Pantalon, and it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's at your local bookstore, but you can get it in hardcover, softcover, Audible, or ebook, Kindle, all of that, on Amazon.com.
And it's easy to find on the bookshelf because it has a nice bright red color with some bright arrows on it, but you can easily see it. It's easy. Whoever designed that knew what they were doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's
wonderful.
Now, Michael, is it also on your website?
Yes. So my website is www.michaelpantalon.com. So you can go there. You can sign up, get some very useful tips. Every few days you get some tips on how to do this. And there's a whole host of media, videos and other interviews and media that's feel free to sign up for that as well.
Oh, sure. And I know we don't want to give away your whole book here, but I know later on in the book you talk about staying true to our higher purpose. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, look, we all have a sense of purpose. And if we don't, we feel it. What this communication style does is it tells a loved one or somebody you care about at work, or especially your child, that you care about helping them figure out what their higher purpose is. You know, because homework doesn't have to get done simply because homework needs itself to get done. It gets done because somebody has a purpose. They want to use it for something bigger. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what happens is when you talk to people about their higher purpose, the thing you want them to do doesn't always connect up with what their purpose is. And even though that means in that moment you can't get that person to do what you wanted them to do, something even more powerful happens, and that is that they tell you, I really want to do this other thing. Mm-hmm. And if we could apply those questions to that, and I could get motivated and going on that, I'd feel all the better and more connected with my own greater purpose on this planet. Then that's fantastic, and we've had that happen quite a number of times.
And I would think that's where that internal motivation comes from as well.
Yeah, I mean, look at how little bonuses have worked for our economic situation. It's not just about the money and status and things and material things, it's the motivation that comes from the inside, the intrinsic motivation of pride, accomplishment, passion. You know, that's where it's at, and that's what this approach mobilizes.
Now, if we could just figure out a way to get this into our political system.
Oh, boy. I don't claim to be an expert there. I would agree it would help.
Yeah, I mean, if we could come up with a way to get them to use it in a positive standpoint, and we could use it to get some influence in those areas, I think we could make some huge gains.
I think that's a whole other show, Alan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
look, it is helpful. People have to work together wherever they are. If they're a mom and a teenager in a home, or a Republican and a Democrat on the same committee, why might you meet me halfway? Oh, yeah, I know you want me to do that. No, why would you want to do that? I could see it happening.
Well, they definitely would need you to present to them at the White House and other places, right? Throughout the country and throughout the world, which is what you do, which is wonderful. But I was curious, too, in your book, you have a lot of self-tests and the rationales that go along with each answer, and I really, really like that. But what was your purpose for putting that all in the book?
The tests, the self-tests, you said?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, because, you know, I'm a trainer and teacher at heart, and I never wanted to have a book that was full of theory, even great theory. I wanted a book that had people get it, just like they get it in my workshops and seminars or webinars, where they put it to practice. And I love especially the quizzes where they realize that the things that they really felt were true about how to motivate someone are actually not so effective. They feel true, but they're not effective. So that level of realization when you put something to practice, even if it's in a book, goes a lot farther than I think just even well-written theory. So I really wanted that in there. I mean, I wrote the book like I do my trainings, and my trainings have always worked, so I thought it would work in there.
Well, I don't see why it wouldn't work. And what I thought was really great, too, you opened up the book talking about going into a training with all these people from HR departments. They're so resistant to trying anything new and different. And can you describe that experience a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I put myself on that chopping block many, many times. I mean, as tough as it is to communicate this approach to people who are resistant to it, who have a more authoritative or confrontational approach to motivating people, I can't tell you the rush or the charge I get as a trainer when I've convinced them, when I see people's eyes twinkling as though they've gotten it. And that's very gratifying to me. And those are the people who need to know about the instant influence approach, because they're out there squashing autonomy all the time. And that makes for a not so happy or motivated workforce. So it's very gratifying when I can turn those audiences around.
And I think one of the things I noticed in the book that I thought was really helpful is that you're not really always trying to turn them around, but in some cases recognizing that somebody else in the audience is doing it for you. And I thought that was a really nice observation, in the sense of going, as you're talking and realizing that certain ones are getting it, letting them project that. Now more people are jumping on because of that person who may be looked at, you know, in a positive way within that company.
Right. I mean, when I presented to these HR execs, you know, plain and simple, they were saying, look, what we have works. How we handle poor performers or difficult employees works. Mm-hmm. And when I pointed out that, you know, it may not always work, some people started grumbling in the back, well, yeah, today it didn't work for me. So what do we do instead? I try to ask lots of questions during the trainings, like I do in the approach, so that people start coming up with answers that convince themselves. Or like you just said, one audience member said, well, yeah, this sounds like when I was motivated as a teenager. I had one teacher really believe in me, and that made all the difference. Mm-hmm. And then people start to listen. So, yeah, you got to look for it. When you're dealing with an audience, you got to look for those one or two people who are starting to get it and ask them questions to convince the rest of the group. Mm-hmm. But when you're working with a kid or an adult, an individual, you have to look for that part of their answer that suggests there's some motivation growing. Like, often people will say to me, I ask somebody about, you know, taking more responsibility at work, and they say, well, you know, I'm not so sure I want to do that. And so I failed. I couldn't find any motivation. what I train people to do is to hear that sentence different. Doesn't it sound kind of resistant? I don't think I want to do that. It's resistant.
Sure.
But when somebody says, I don't think I want to do that, I'm not so sure I want to do that, I train my audiences to pick up on the part that is motivational. Can you hear some motivation in there?
Not sure.
Yeah. If they were sure, they'd be saying, no way, see ya. They wouldn't even stop to have the conversation. So when people learn this approach, they start to hear resistance even differently. They hear the part of it that still suggests some motivation, like, I'm still thinking about it. I'm not sure that I won't do it. Well, what's the part of you that's arguing in favor of it? Tell me about that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
excuse me.
I was thinking, too, when you were talking about, in the book you talk about on tips for delivering the messages and how to take a breath and pause, which allows the other person to sit there and think and process before they answer. And, I mean, we learn that as therapists, too, to sit back and let them be uncomfortable enough that they come up with something to talk about. So patience is a big theme throughout your book, I found.
It is, but you don't have to have patience for a long interaction. In fact, if you wait 5 seconds even after you've asked somebody what might be good about doing what I'm asking you to do, mm-hmm. that really puts the pressure on them to think of something.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, in social interactions, people feel obligated to answer a question.
Oh, and 5 seconds can seem like eternity sometimes for some people.
Depending on the question.
Right. People tell me, 7 minutes, that's too quick. All right, imagine being mostly quiet after asking a question when you're having an interaction with somebody. Does the 7 minutes sound so quick? No, that's going to be a lot of silence. Well, that's what you're doing. You're asking some powerful questions, and you're just sitting back. It doesn't take that long.
Right, absolutely. And yeah, I was also reading later in the book, and this is an issue that I was just thinking about this weekend, too, when you talked about... Because I could really appreciate how you motivate yourself regarding getting an assistant. I mean, I'm right now sitting there going, okay, I've got to go back to this book later and sit down and go through my reasons why I wouldn't get an assistant or why I would get an assistant, which I know I need.
There you go. I'm sorry to catch you. But you see, that, you know, you're a psychologist. When we slip, it's just a slip of the tongue, but it also suggests we're so used to asking ourselves,
why won't
I just get that help that I need? Why won't I? It doesn't work.
Yeah, so why would I? And I was reading your rationales for it and why you would. I'm going, that's why I would. That's why I would. That's why I would. Especially when I'm sitting there.
I gave you the reasons.
Until I'm there at 11:30 at night trying to do billing and filing and organizing.
Right.
You know, auditing my files, and it's like, oh my gosh, I need help here. So.
You do. We all need extra help. And it's funny when, you know, you realize that you can train other people to do this, and sometimes you don't do it for yourself. So I sat down and I did that, or I did it with a group that I was training. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to do something, let's say you're saying, well, I am motivated to do this. Why haven't I done it yet then? That's exactly the wrong question. It makes sense, but it doesn't work. It's not effective. Why would I? Even better, why would I love it if I did this? What would be so great about it for me? And write down your own list. Even if it's the same as mine, do the actual activity of writing it out. And it made all the difference for me.
Well, I really appreciate
now
that.
Now I need to hire
story.
Two more, but I'll have to get on that.
Well, I really appreciate that story because it so resonated with me because I was at the office so late every night this last week doing that filing and paperwork and all that other fun stuff. I really wish I had an assistant. So why would I get one? So I could spend more time at home.
Exactly.
That's right. And what would you do if you were had more time at home?
Oh, I would do a lot of things. I'd spend more time with the dog at the beach.
Well, be careful if it means more work at home. It has to turn into something pleasurable, too.
Right. For you, it has to be more time with your dog, more time horseback riding, more time doing the things that you want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great thing what you bring up in regards to the book. There was something in particular that resonated with you. I had the same thing. Actually, the same one resonated with me.
Oh.
But I also saw as I was reading it that there were different things that I thought would resonate with different people. So at one point I thought, okay, this is a great thing for parents, you know, and then I thought, okay, well now this is a great thing for my staff when they're talking to the teenagers. They would be able to use this or other things where I thought, you know, from a business standpoint, working with employees, this would be a great thing. So I think that's one of the things, and if there's a message to get out there to everybody in regards to the book is that it's not just how it will work with your family, but it really is something that how it will work with you, like, again, getting the assistant. How are you going to motivate yourself, or how are you going to motivate your employees or your, you know, or your own children or your loved ones? So I love the fact that it really does sort of cross a lot of different lines and does it quite well.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk a lot about behaviors and taking small steps. And I know you put the Chinese proverb in there, the journey of 1,000 trails begins with a single step. And I just absolutely love that. Because that's what...
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, you can't motivate yourself to take the 20th step or the last step in a process if you don't take the first one. I know we want to think big and we want to do big, but it's always going to be about the next step or the first step in this process.
Well, it reminds me of my favorite movie, What About Bob? Baby Steps.
Yeah, Baby Steps, right. But you know what happens, though? It's not, you know, if a task has 15 million baby steps, it doesn't mean you have to motivate yourself on each and every one. It just means that you have to get your motivation going with the first few. After that, it should take off. Because you're going to start to reap the rewards of your activity. People hear, you know, steps, a baby step approach, and they think that they'll have to be holding someone's hand for the whole thing. No, this quickly gets their motivation fired up and going, and the rest kind of takes care of itself.
It's like cleaning the house for me. It's like once I get started, I just keep going. I tell myself, oh, I could do it for 20 minutes, and then I'll spend 3 hours.
Right. But that's key. If somebody were to motivate someone else to clean the house, they wouldn't say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you to clean the whole house? They'd be dead in the water immediately.
Yep.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you to clean this corner of the kitchen, and I prohibit you from doing any more because it's about getting motivated and just getting started. But you know what happens. You start to clean this corner, you go to that corner, and you go to that corner, and then you go into the other room. And the next thing you know, your own natural intrinsic drive has taken over. This is really just a jump start.
And I like that when it happens.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And
although that's sometimes the reason not to start cleaning the house, because you won't stop for the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, what are some other ways this has worked for you in your life? I know you talk about some personal experiences in the book as well.
Right. So some personal experiences that I also wanted to mention, that this is good for strangers. You know, so customer service representatives on the phone, waiters and waitresses, people who come to your home, contractors to make a deal to fix something in your house or to remodel something. We hardly ever ask them, why might you come down on the price? What would be in it for you? And they look at me like I'm a lunatic because, of course, that means less money. That's not good for them. But I can't tell you how many times someone has said to me, well, I just started back in the business and, you know, you seem like a good client who would spread the word. It would be worth it for me to lower the price because, you know, you give me some good referrals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're a shrink. You can convince people when they call you to get a referral from me. So you never know why somebody might give you a better deal, even a stranger. So I would still ask, why might you do better for me? What would be in it for you, Mr. Contractor, to do better? But, yeah, there are some personal things here. I mean, I helped my father quit smoking by using the approach, even though his, you know, English is his distant second language, and he was not very interested in quitting at the time. But after a few moments, he convinced himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very powerful for me because it is a little tougher to do with people who you have a certain relationship with where you have been confrontational in the past. So as a kid growing up, I was always confrontational with my dad about quitting smoking.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the autonomy conversation much harder to have. But you can still do it as long as you convince the person, look, I'm not forcing you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you switched it around with him.
Yeah.
Your approach.
Yeah, and give us some examples, because I think in the story about your father and the point that you bring up, because you are now in the field that you're in and because you have brought it up to him in previous times, How do you get past that part, and I'll use myself at this point, of, oh, okay, Dad's trying to manipulate us into doing something now because he has some new technique. And so how do you deal with that? Because I very personally, my own teenagers will get on me. I'll start talking about something. Here goes Dad again, you know. So.
Well, look, let's call it like it is and say, you're right, here I go again. This is my topic to talk about. But I'll tell you two things. I'm not trying to manipulate you. And this is not some trick. This is it is something that I'm talking about, but I would only want you to do this, whatever the issue is, if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Believe me, only if you wanted to. The only thing I'm asking is answer this question. Is there anything in it for you to do this thing? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, you were asking about reactants before, yeah. Or prescribing the symptoms. Sometimes I tell people, look, it is so up to you that you don't even have to tell me what's in it for you to do it. That's your business. That's your answer. But do me a favor, as you leave this room or as you go out or do whatever you're doing, think about what might be in it for you to do the thing we were just talking about. Quit smoking, clean your room, call me, text me, whatever it is. And when you tell them, don't even tell me, they really can't help but to think about it because I've prescribed that they not tell me, and then they're compelled to think about it.
And they almost want to tell you.
But right. Well, often what happens is they're like, well, it could help here and it could help there. They start telling you, and then they hear themselves argue in favor of change.
Yeah, and you know, the biggest thing I think I take from this book, well, there's a lot of things I take from this book, and some things I was glad to see I already do with some of my clients and in other areas of my life, and now it's going to be more honed in thanks to your book, Instant Influence. But one absolutely has to do anything. The choice is always theirs, and that's what I try to get across to people. It's like nobody can make you stay in this relationship.
Right.
You're choosing to stay. So if you choose to stay...
Right.
What would benefit you from staying? Why would you stay in it?
Well, if that's what you want the person to consider. So as much as it is up to them, if we're in this conversation for a reason and we're above board on it, let's say we want the person to leave because it's a harmful relationship to them, we can still ask the question in a sided way. Mm-hmm. Look, I know you love him, and I know you're committed to him. That's your call. I would never want to get in the way. But has it ever crossed your mind about how things might be better if you did leave? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you should,
right?
But it seems one-sided. Is there any value on the other side? Is there any value to you in even considering the other side? So it is a sided conversation, but you're above board on it. And they only need to take that side if they have their own good reasons. But I tell people, look, if you're a boss, you're in a position of saying, why might you consider the new structural changes that corporate is instituting? Why might you make that, you know, why might you help make that a reality? What would be in it for you? You know, you see what I'm saying? That mm-hmm. you do have a side in this.
Right, but I still love giving the person the autonomy. And I think you wrote in there that one of the biggest parts, what you wrote was, most common difficulty for your trainees was respecting autonomy with the action plans and resisting the urge to take over when they're in this process.
Right, because, I mean, I can't tell you how many parents or probation officers or drug counselors have told me, no, but they really do have to stop that behavior. And I say, well, it would be healthier. It would be better in these regards, but in principle, they don't absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're telling them that, we're actually making it harder for them to change. We're becoming part of the problem. And it's very hard for people to wrap their heads around that sometimes. But when they do, it takes seconds after that to make a difference in that person's life because mm-hmm. it really unleashes a lot of influence and power in that person.
Yeah, and it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, they're cementing in whatever it is that is their objection. So, you know, the more that you ask them what their objection is, the more they're thinking about their objection, which means they're cementing it in their mind and reinforcing it as opposed to doing just the opposite. Now they're starting to forget what their objection was because you're asking them, why might they? What could change to make this happen? And I think that's a huge benefit.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, if people do what they rehearse themselves saying, mm-hmm. and if all, they're always defending this harmful partner, if they're always defending their drug use, if they're always defending the status quo in business, then they'll just keep doing those things. We need to radically shift the conversation to the other side. So that much of a nudge in the conversation to go to the other side is fine, but the person is still free to choose whether or not they do it.
Well, Michael, I got to tell you, I wish we had more time to nudge our way through this, but I've just looked at the clock. I cannot believe that we're out of time. This time has flown by. But first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you.
For writing the book. I think it's a great book. And for anybody out there, again, you can go to the website. It's www.michaelpantalon.com. And you can get more information, again, in regards to the book as well as some other things. Now, you mentioned in regards to seminars. Do you have any upcoming seminars?
Well, yeah. They're all listed on the website. And if you subscribe to the website, you'll get information about one-on-one teleclasses, webinars, coaching, and presentations that might be coming to a town near you. So please check it out.
Absolutely. We will. And for those of you, if you're driving, if you couldn't write that down, you can always go to our website. It is answers4thefamilyblog.com. And if you have questions for Michael, shoot them over to us. We will forward them. Again, Michael, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye now.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.